Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Joining me today is Tiffany DiBartolo, the infamous writer and co-founder of California-based indie rock label Bright Antenna Records, a label that's been home to acts like Will Dorado, Sports Team, In the Valley Below, and The Wombats. But running a record label isn't all she does. Tiffany is also an insanely prolific author who's penned a number of critically acclaimed novels like How to Kill a Rockstar, Sorrow, Squirrel Pancake, and God-Shaped Hole. Tiffany and I discuss her long and storied career, the riveting time she spent in Jeff Buckley's childhood home, and our current anxieties in a post-Roe v. Wade world. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. So how's your week been? I'm glad we finally got on to connect.
I know, me too. Thanks for your patience in trying to find a day that worked for both of us. The week has been really good, very busy. We had a band in town on Tuesday and I had to drive up to Sacramento to see them and didn't get home until really late. And we have another artist playing in San Francisco tonight. So a lot of late nights this week, which is very hard for me. I like to be asleep by 9:30.
Absolutely. Yeah, the more I go out to a show, the more I just become accustomed to it being like a routine. And then I'm like, oh, I just want to go to sleep.
Yep. I like your t-shirts.
Thank you. It's do you know Fine Southern Gentleman Designs? They make bomb graphics for these band shirts.
Oh, cool. So, no, I haven't heard of them, but that's good to know.
Yeah, for audio listeners, I'm wearing a Modern Lovers t-shirt designed by Fine Southern Gentleman. I wish they were sponsoring this podcast.
Maybe they will. Let's keep talking about them.
That's the rules. I just have to say their name and then they have to pay me. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, who were the artists that you had performing in Sacramento?
Yeah, Tuesday in Sacramento, it was this really amazing and super cool British band called Sports Team. If you haven't heard of them, you should check them out and try to see them live because their live show is amazing. And then tonight, this really amazing sort of like almost R&B singer named Fauna Hughes is playing Pop Scene in San Francisco. So.
And so they're both on Bright Antenna, correct?
Correct.
I recognize those names from looking at the roster. So I guess to start, would you like to say your name, what time it is, and your location?
Sure. My name is Tiffany DiBartolo. It is March 30th at 3:03 p.m. California time, and I am in San Francisco, California.
Very nice. Where in San Francisco?
I actually live in Marin, so just across the Golden Gate. Where are you?
I am in Chelsea in New York.
Nice.
And it is currently 6:03 p.m. where I am.
Nice.
And to start, we can do like a little get to know you session. Would you like to tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in a small town in Ohio called Youngstown. I left there at 17, went to school at Berkeley here in California and studied philosophy. Became a screenwriter after I graduated and then started writing novels. I've published 3 novels and 1 graphic novel. And about, I guess, 15 years ago, started a independent record label with my husband and a couple other people. And so have been sort of dividing my time between being a writer and running a record label for the last, that was 2007. So yeah, almost 16 years. And And I'm just really passionate about music and really passionate about books. So I love that I somehow parlayed my passions into jobs. I wish everyone could do that.
I'm curious to know like who some of your favorite novelists are, since you're an author as well.
Yeah, well, people tell me I have misogynist taste in writers because a lot of my favorite writers are like old white men. Like I was really influenced by people like Henry Miller and Ernest Hemingway. I love Tim O'Brien, but also like Dave Eggers. I love, he's not a misogynist. Yeah, who else? I gravitate towards sort of novels that are kind of really about humans. I write about, you know, sort of like what it's like to figure out how to be a human on this planet. And I tend to like books by people who are also writing about that. I read an amazing novel just a few months ago called Dinosaurs. And I can't remember the name of the woman who wrote it, Lily something, but it was like that too. It was just this really simple story about this guy trying to put his life back together after a breakup. But it was like so simple and so moving. And so I like stories like that.
That's really cool. What role did music play in your life growing up?
Music was everything to me growing up. I was one of those very weird kids who used to sit in her room all day and listen to music and write in my journal, writing the lyrics to all the songs that I loved and all that kind of thing. Like to the point where my parents, when I was in high school, it would be Friday night and they would be like, "Don't you want to go out on a date or something?" And I'd be like, "I'm just going to stay home and watch The Wall." But I also will say that my life was really changed by music too, because, you know, I'd been to concerts before, but when I was in eighth grade, I saw U2 for the first time. And it was such a life-changing experience because I was sitting in the fourth row and they're playing like this song that is still one of my all-time favorite songs. It's a song off of their album, The Unforgettable Fire, and it's called Bad. And Bono is just like emoting this song in this way that is just teaching me, again, just teaching me about how to be a human. And I just remember watching that show and being like, this is how I want to live. Like, this is how I want to feel things in life and experience things, you know, like I want everything to touch me and I want it to mean something. And like, I remember going home and like the next day writing in my journal, like, I'm not the same person that I was before I saw that show. And I still feel that way. And I still go to see U2 every time they tour, like a dozen times every tour, because it just reminds me of that kind of like transcendence and the power music has to like really just teach us things about ourselves and life and love and sorrow and grief and all of these things.
That's incredible. I love that. I didn't have that experience at a show until actually, because as a kid, don't get me wrong, I would go to arena rock shows. I would go see my favorite pop artists at stadiums. And every time I would just be like, oh my goodness, like this is thrilling. But like you're in the nosebleed section and stuff like that. So you can barely like see, like you're looking at the jumbotrons and
right,
stuff
you might
like
as well
that.
Be watching it on your computer.
Yeah, and you'll also be watching it on your computer after. Yeah. And so like it's like I wish I could have had that experience where like I don't have to like feel compelled to relive an experience like that by watching videos on my phone, you know. And so stuff like that, like, so, and then I would like hear like my friends who were just as passionate about music as I was talk about like the first concert that changed their life, or like older people talk about that. And then like I finally started going to more house shows and more local shows, because right before quarantine, like I was just like really starting to get in the groove of like going to more and more shows, and then it shut down. And then when everything came back, I was like never missing the opportunity. Like I'm going to 6+ shows a week. And then in October, I went to a very small, tiny like house show to see a local band. the minute they started, the entire room started like vibrating on like a different frequency. And that was the moment I was like, finally, like I had that like life altering moment at a show, you know,
never forget,
never forget. Yeah. It's incredible. And
love
so,
that.
And like after you saw that like U2 concert as well, like how do you feel like that changed the way you experienced music throughout your life, like as time went on?
Well, I honestly think that it actually changed me as a person. Like it opened my heart. And I know that might sound cheesy, but it's just like I feel like seeing people kind of give their all like that really kind of, it resonated with me on a really deep level of like, I have to do that. Like that's what I am, you know? And so I just feel like it changed my whole life path because it made me kind of have this really strong desire to chase my dreams and to kind of like not let things be ordinary, if that makes sense. Like I just remember thinking like nothing, mere entertainment is never going to be enough for me now, you know? Like you were saying, like arena rock shows or whatever, like that's fun and entertaining and whatever, but like I need more, you know? I need something else. I need people putting their hearts on the line, and that's what I want to do too, you know? Like in my work, it's important to me to, you know, to write my truth and to speak my truth and to explore what that even is, you know, and ask questions and try to dive into them and just take risks in life. You know, I grew up in this town that was like, I joke that it was so bad. Bruce Springsteen wrote a song about it, but that is a great way to describe it because it was just like one of those towns where people think high school is their best 4 years of life. And then it's all downhill from there, you know? And like, I just wanted more than that. I wanted things to mean something more than that. And I really credit you too for teaching me that.
And that raises another question I have about your writing, because when you're crafting fictional characters, do you feel like you're drawing from your own personal experience, or do you feel like you're stepping into like a different world that you feel like you want to experience vicariously?
That's a really good question. I would say I do a little bit of both because it's inevitable that your life bleeds into your work. I mean, it's really hard for me not to bring parts of myself, or specifically parts of myself that I want to explore. Like doing that through characters is a really good way for me to do it. So I do that all the time. And often like something in my life will trigger the novel I want to work on, whether it's, you know, like for instance, my first novel, which was called God-Shaped Hole, I wrote after Jeff Buckley died. I don't know if you know the musician Jeff Buckley, but he is just an incredible, amazing singer and songwriter. And he died tragically at 30. And I was so heartbroken after he died that I sat down and listened to his album, Grace, for 9 months and just made up a story as I was listening to it. And it was sort of like I wanted to like sort of give back to him what he had given to me in his music. So I crafted this story and it ended up being my first novel. And so I can't even remember what the question you asked. I feel like it just went off on a tangent, but oh yeah. So that like, that's an example of how something that I'm experiencing in my life, like I was deeply grieving the loss of him. I didn't know him as a person, but as an artist and as a soul on this planet, I was grieving him. And so my way of doing that was writing about it. And so, you know, I tend to do that. Something tends to hurt me, or I have a question about it. And my way of processing is making up stories and playing with imaginary friends all day, trying to make sense of life.
Yeah. You also wrote a Jeff Buckley inspired graphic novel too, right?
Yeah, which was a crazy experience because I'd been such a huge fan of his and I'd written God-Shaped Hole, and then like a decade had gone by And his mom had read God-Shaped Hole when it came out because there was some press about how it had been inspired by him. And so she read it and she really loved it. And so a publishing company had contacted her about wanting to do a graphic novel of Jeff's life. And so when they did, she was like, okay, I'll sign off on that, but only if Tiffany can write it. So I got to spend like a few weeks with her and like with Jeff's journals and all of his old demos and stuff. And it was a pretty magical experience after, you know, feeling so connected to his music. It was, yeah, just unforgettable and amazing.
Wow. That yeah. is incredible.
It was really incredible. Like I remember just like sitting in his mom's kitchen with all of his journals, just being like, how the F did I get here? You know?
Yeah. You know, that's like, that reminds me a bit of Phoebe Bridgers when she wrote Punisher. It was inspired by how if she were to run into Elliot Smith at a bar, she would have been a total Punisher and just would have like just jawed this poor guy's ear off like for hours and hours.
I didn't know that was the story. I love that.
Yeah. The title track is like specifically about that hypothetical scenario of her running into Elliot Smith at a bar. And it's just like, just so gut-wrenching. And she's joked about this too, like sometimes it can feel like so self-indulgent to really just mull over and just to go off the deep end with imagining running into like your heroes who are already dead. But it's also like art that inspires people begets great art as well, which I feel like your writing proves that especially.
Yes. And I feel like so indebted to all of the artists that inspire me that way, because it's such a big part of where my work comes from. Like the novel that I released most recently is called Sorrow, and it was inspired by the music of The National. I was out on a hike one day and I was listening to one of their albums, and it's like I'd listened to the album 1,000 times at that point. But this one day, I'm like staring at these redwood trees and Pink Rabbits comes on and it conjures up this whole scene in my head. And I get home from the hike and I just start immediately writing the scene down. And that ended up being the start of Sorrow.
Interesting. What is the story arc?
Well, I mean, it's really about courage. It's about someone who lives their life from a place of fear and desperately wants to change that and doesn't know how and keeps getting tested on it. But he's a musician and what's it about? It's about love and art and how art can save us and change us and trying to be courageous.
That's terrible. Awesome.
Elevator pitch.
I love that. I feel like their Alligator album is definitely an underrated, like in my top three for sure. Cause my mom used to play it. So I guess like I have the whole nostalgia induced, like memories of like hearing Secret Meeting at family parties and stuff like that.
I love that. Gosh, your mom must be so cool. It's funny, when my first novel, God-Shaped Hole, came out, and this was like 2001, I think, but it was a couple of years later, a fan sent me The National's record, CD of The National, and was like, I loved your book so much. And for some reason, I think you would love this band. And that's how I actually discovered their music, was a fan of one of my books sent it to me.
And wow.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was Alligator, because that one was before Boxer. Yeah.
And also, in addition to, I guess, when the label started, what are the biggest things that you have learned, like when it comes to like running a label? Because when you start out, like it feels like you're stepping into a whole different world almost.
That is for sure. And I had no real experience in the music business. And it was kind of this fluke thing where my husband and I were both full-time writers. And we had this friend who was a music producer. And one night we were sitting around talking about how crappy songs on the radio were. And my friend was like, you know what we should do? He also, by the way, he'd had like 2 bottles of wine at this point. And he was like, you know what we should do? we should start a label. And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Let's do that. And so like a few months later, he shows up with a business plan and we kind of like, without even thinking, commit to this business. And then we realized, oh shit, like this is a lot of work. And for the first 2 years, they were almost throwaway. Like we didn't know what we were doing. And what's even worse was that we basically started the label like 5 minutes after people stopped buying music, you know? So it was like, we're coming from this place of, you know, we're going to sell a bunch of records and yada, yada, yada. And all of a sudden we were like, oh, wait, there's no income streams for music anymore. Like where, okay, where do we go from there? And, you know, back then the DSPs, you know, Spotify was still really young and not everybody was using them that like they do now. So that was really, that was the hardest part for us, is like figuring out what it actually meant to be a label and how can we help our artists make a living doing this? Because it used to be a lot easier to make a living being a musician than it is now.
Yeah. And, you know, like that famous book, best-selling book by Donald S. Passman, Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry, it keeps getting updated like every 5 months because the music industry changes so fast. Yep. It's crazy. It's wild.
It's kind of a mess. But I mean, there are good things and bad things about it because obviously it allows anyone to, you know, release their music. And that most of the time is a great thing because otherwise there are some really amazing talents that we would never hear of. But the flip side of that is there are also people who still don't know what they're doing and they're putting their music up and they're diluting the pool for the people who are actually really talented and ready to be there. So, you know, there's all these double-edged swords about it. And I have so many mixed feelings about all of it. I just wish that the DSPs would pay the artists better.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious, what are your feelings about the whole merge of Live Nation and Ticketmaster and how like they don't even need to threaten people because there is no competition?
Yeah. I mean, I can't really speak too eloquently on that because I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I do know that I'm against monopolies. That's all I'll say. You know, I think that it's dangerous to allow a company in any industry to have that much power and say so over the market. So I'm holding out hope that something will be done about that.
Same. What do you feel has been the biggest part of your mentality operating that you feel like has really kept you driven to always persist when it can be so, so easy to just like get crushed under all the pressure and like all the changes that happen every 2 weeks in the industry and stuff like that? What do you think is the biggest part of your mentality that has kept you going?
You know, I think the answer to that question is also the answer to what makes Bright Antenna special as an independent record label. And that is that we cultivate this really beautiful family atmosphere. You know, there's 8 of us in the office. So we're a really small team and we're all really close, but we also are really close to the artists we work with, you know, like they become family too. And so there's this mutual respect that we have and this really strong desire to work hard for these people because they're really good people and we really care about them. And I think that is not the case in most record labels. Most record labels are just, you know, looking to make money. And don't get me wrong, that's great too. But for us, it's like when we find an artist or a band that we really love, we need to spend time with them and decide if we like them as people because we want that relationship with them. We want that family dynamic. And it really, I think it makes a difference for the artists too, that they feel like there's always someone they could call to ask questions or to vent to, or, and they know that we're working so hard for on their behalf. And then, you know, we have these moments where we see that payoff and it makes all the hard work worth it. Last summer, this band that we work with called Will Dorado, who is just, they're just amazing. And they're the nicest, nicest humans as well. And, you know, we, the first time we saw them play years ago before we signed them, you know, there was like 10 people in the room and they played Red Rocks last summer, which is like this big, amazing outdoor venue in Denver. And their wives came and their parents came and like, we were all there just like, they played their hit single and the whole crowd was just screaming it at the top of their lungs. And like all of my coworkers were there and we are all just crying. We're just like, look how far we've come. Like, and just so proud of them. And it, so moments like that, where you're just like, oh man, like on the days where you're like, oh, this is so hard and we're banging our heads against the wall. But then you, you know, you have those moments where, you know, your band is singing to 5,000 people and they're all cheering and happy, and it makes it all worth it.
Definitely. And what are some of, this is a fun question, what are some of your favorite initiatives that you've put together for artists in recent years that you feel like were really like outside the box and fun?
Well, we are very good at that too, because that is like one of our things. Like when we're in creative meetings, we're all like, okay, who can come up with the craziest idea to market this? And I think definitely the craziest one we've ever come up with, this another really amazing band that we work with called In the Valley Below. They're this really cool husband and wife duo, and they're just super cool and super sexy on stage and so talented. And they made this really amazing record. And we were sitting, it was me and my husband and my other business partner sitting with their manager one day, like having this pre-album release meeting going like, what can we do really like thinking outside of the box here to like get some attention on this album? And sort of as a joke, I said, because the band is so sexy, I was like, we should make a porn. And the manager was like, say more about that. And I was like, I don't know, something like really tasteful and sexy that's like this album length video, you know? And he was like, the band might be into that. And so he texts them the idea and they are like, yes, let's do that. And so Angie, who's the female singer in the band, she writes this entire script based on the album, the screenplay, in like, I don't know, 6 weeks she has it done. And they cast the film. They find this amazing chateau to film the whole thing in. And it's basically just, you know, each song is, you know, sort of guides the whole story. And it's very tastefully done, like more like French erotica, you know, it's not like hardcore porn or anything, but, you know, it's definitely not safe for work. And it was so cool. Like, it was just like, people loved it. And it just was such a great and beautiful piece of art that to accompany the album. And the album was called The Pink Chateau. So they had rented this chateau and each song was a different room in the house. And it was just awesome. And so that's like a great example of us being like, what can we do that no one else has done? You know?
That is incredible. I'm going to have to watch that tonight.
Definitely. You can watch it on Amazon, I think. This is my dog, Kazoo.
Hello.
Hello, Kazoo. Hello.
Kazoo, is that his name?
Kazoo, yeah.
Kazoo. Kazoo?
Very big.
What breed?
I have two of them. They're Irish Wolfhounds.
Irish Wolfhounds?
Yeah, aww. They're really amazing.
So sweet.
These dogs, they're the most amazing and magical creatures I've ever known, but their lifespan, because they're so big, is 6 to 8 years. It's so heartbreaking.
How old are they now?
The one that was just here is 5, and then the younger one is 1.5.
What's the younger one's name?
Sequoia.
Sequoia? Oh, like the tree?
Uh-huh, because he's a giant tree.
It's so sweet. I love that. I've actually been watching, this is totally unrelated to music, but I've been watching this YouTube channel called Girl with the Dogs.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's a professional groomer. She's based in Montreal, I think, and she has her husband film all of her grooming sessions, cuts them down to like 2 to 3 minute videos that she posts on YouTube, and she does commentary explaining what the breed is.
Oh, fun.
How they functioned throughout history, what they were used for, whether it be like pulling like sleds, like an Alaskan Malamute or a Husky, or just like hunting fish and stuff like that. And
that's awesome.
And it's been so cool. Like, I'm fully addicted to that channel.
Look that up, because I'm obsessed with dogs.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Mine are like they're so big. They're almost 7 feet tall if they stand on their hind legs. They weigh like 150 pounds each. They weigh more than my husband.
Wow.
I know, they're huge.
To sort of roll on back to, I guess, the current state of how things are operating in the culture, how do you feel like the current state of the industry with regards to how it treats women and queer people? What are your current thoughts and feelings at the moment?
Huh. I mean, that's a good question too. I don't know if I have enough experience to really speak to that. I kind of feel like every industry needs to pay more attention to that, needs to be way more, I don't know, way more conscious of equality. But I think that's a countrywide problem. I mean, it's just so heartbreaking what's going on in this country. Like, the whole thing about the drag queens in Tennessee is just like, I don't understand. Like, they had that shooting at a school in Nashville, and these politicians are still worrying about banning books and banning drag shows. I mean, they need to get their heads out of their asses. Why do they care? Why do they care?
My prediction is I don't think they do. I think it's strategic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is. But how sad and infuriating that they will put people's lives at risk.
Yep.
And take away personal freedoms for that, you know, like,
yeah.
What does that say about a person?
Yeah.
The lack of respect is mind boggling. And I think that that's what it comes down to. It comes down to, everybody deserves an equal amount of respect and dignity, to be treated with dignity, to live the life they want to live. They're not bothering anybody, you know, like, get over it. It's just,
yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get it. This country is breaking my heart in so many ways. We're better.
Yeah, absolutely. And the worst part is that, like, most of the time they know exactly what they're doing and how it's going to affect people's lives, and they just don't care.
They don't care. They don't care. And I don't know how they sleep at night not caring.
And I feel like this is like my total, like, I don't know. This is total Schadenfreude, but like I feel like this is just an age thing. My mom is one of the moderate Democrats who thinks we need to reach across the aisle, and that's why like Joe Biden is gonna save us. And I'm just like, you are delusional if you think that, because look where we are now. Look what's happening. Where has he been? What has he done? Oh, and by the way, remember that speech where he said the pandemic is over?
Yeah.
I guess it's over, guys. I didn't know that.
I mean, it's, you're right. I feel like that too. And that's another reason why I'm like, if he even runs again, he doesn't care about America, because like, he can say he cares about this country so much, but if he runs again, he could ruin everything. If he loses, and if he doesn't lose, like, what, he's going to be 100 trying to run this country? Give me a break. Like,
yeah. You're
right. He's not doing anything. And that generation just needs to go away. And, you know, things like that have happened that I thought were going to turn the tides, and they didn't. I mean, I remember how naive, this is going to tell you how naive I was, but when the first time we elected Barack Obama, I thought this country was showing us that we changed. I was like, this is the dawn of a new day. This is so revolutionary. This is so remarkable. Like, we can't go backwards now. And how far backwards did we go 8 years later? As far back as you can get. So it's terrifying.
Yeah. And also, like, I feel like when those pendulum swings, like, in the least desirable direction happen, I feel like it harkens back to a lot of what a lot of my friends and I guess like elders in the queer community have always said to me and warned me about, was that you cannot trust the government even when they grant rights, because those rights can and will be taken away overnight.
Yeah.
And now cool. that we're seeing that, it's really, if anything, the faith that I do have is always in the people, because that we are really the only ones who can help each other at the end of the day.
Yep.
And I feel like, I guess to tie this back to the arts, I feel like a big part of why the arts are so like underfunded and demonized is because they inspire people.
Yep. Yep.
And they give people like that extra like hope when there could have been none, you know?
Yeah, it's a very powerful voice. And that's why it's important to use it too. I mean, I always encourage the artists I work with to speak up for what they believe in, you know, because some of them get shy about it and don't want to alienate fans. But I'm just like, fuck that. You don't need those fans.
Yeah. Like, if anything, like, if someone has that type of reaction, like, oh, well, if you're going to do this, then I'm unfollowing or I'm going to like boycott your music. It's like, fine, get on the curb with the rest of the trash. You're just, at least I know who you are now. Like,
yeah, you know, yeah. I had a few haters show up on my Instagram when all the Roe v. Wade stuff was going down and I was really outspoken about it. And, you know, people just calling me terrible names and, you know, I'm not going to follow you anymore, whatever. And I'm just like, bye. Do you think I care? I don't care. I don't want you to follow me anyway. If you don't think women have rights.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Seriously. It's like,
not losing sleep over that, buddy.
And what are you, and what is it saying about you and your stupid ego that you have to make a public service announcement about right. your unfollowing gesture? Like, yeah, it's like, that important. Like,
I don't care.
Yeah. It's like, I never even thought about you. You're just an anonymous screen name.
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
Really silly. People are very, very silly on the internet. I try to have compassion for them and just like take the point of view that they're hurting inside, and that's why they are so mean and so wrong. But sometimes it's not that easy.
And I guess to end on a fun note, what was the most recent show that you went to where you feel like you had another transcendental experience?
Well, I'm going to have a really weird answer to that. And that is that show is happening on Tuesday. I haven't seen it yet, but there's this artist that I've been following and that we're trying to work with. We're wooing him at the moment. And I haven't seen him live yet, except on video. And the performances I've seen on video had me in tears and like all the hair on my arm standing up. So I already know that when I see him next week, I'm going to have that reaction. I'm going to cry through the whole set and just feel like if I don't work with this person, I'm going to have to retire.
Who is the artist?
I feel too scared to tell you because then
you don't want to jinx it.
But I'll email it to you.
Cool. Yeah.
You may even have heard of him. He just played New York like last night and the night before or something.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'll email you his name.
Cool. That'll be the loophole to getting around the jinx.
Yes, exactly. Cause I think you would love his music. And he looks like a really amazing person. And I'm really excited to meet him and really, really hope we get to work with him. I haven't been this excited about a new artist in a long time.
That's amazing. Well, fingers crossed. I am sending like all of the positive juju your way.
Thank you so much. And I'd love to someday meet you in person. You should come to one of our shows. We go to New York a lot for shows, so I'll keep you posted.
Yes, please do. I would absolutely love to come to one of them. And to wrap up, where can people find you online? What are any other shameless plugs you have? You can use this space to promote whatever you want.
Awesome. Well, the best place to find me is on Instagram because I'm not on any other social media platform. Tiffany DiBartolo is my handle there, just my name. And that's Tiffany with an IE. And brightantenna.com is where you can find out about all of our bands that we work with. And I hope people check out my books too. My most recent one was called Sorrow. And it's a really beautiful story about music and art and love and courage. So that's about it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. I had a blast chatting with you.
Me too.
And yeah, and I will obviously keep you posted and let you know when this goes live. And power to you. You're doing the Lord's work out there. So
you too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Tiffany DiBartolo for joining me today.
Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.